Hello and welcome to the podcast portion of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, previews, reviews, and interviews with baseball authors, artists, filmmakers, musicians, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Thanks to social media and email, there are probably people we've known for many years, but have never actually met or spoken with. For me, Mike Shannon is one of those people. I would venture to say I've been corresponding with Shannon for 20 years or so, but I recently had a chance to actually hear his voice in our recent bookshelf conversation. Shannon is the founder and editor-in-chief of Spitball, the literary baseball magazine. Since Elysian Fields Quarterly bit the dust several years ago, Spitball is pretty much it, when it comes to outlets for baseball fiction and poetry. In addition to offering original material, Spitball hosts an annual award for the best baseball writing of the year, regardless of genre, with the Casey Awards. Among the recipients of the honor over the last 33 years, that bears repeating, Eric Rolf Greenberg was the first recipient for his novel The Celebrant. Charles Learson won last year for Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. Others who have won the award include Roger Kahn, Bill James, Michael Lewis, Marty Appel, Peter Gallenbach, Jonathan Eig, and Kostya Kennedy and Howard Bryant, who are both two-time recipients. Shannon is understandably proud of the work Spitball has done over the years, but he's also an accomplished writer in his own right. In fact, three of his books, Willie Mays, Art in the Outfield, Baseball Books, A Collector's Guide, and Diamond Classics, Essays on the Best 100 Baseball Books Ever Published, are included in my book, 501 Baseball Books Fans Must Read Before They Die. So without any further ado, here's my bookshelf conversation with Mike Shannon. Michael Shannon, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Hi, Ron.
So how difficult is it for to maintain a publication like Spitball?
Oh, it's not hard at all, as long as you're willing to put up with crushed dreams and poverty and indifference by the public. It's very easy.
So it's the same as being an artist, then.
What's that?
It's the same as being an artist, then.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just kidding, as you know, because I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it immensely. We have not figured out a way to make money off of Spitball. But I don't regret one minute of my time founding the magazine, developing the magazine, working on the magazine, publishing the magazine, because what we've done, and I can't believe how long we've been doing it now. It's been like 35 years or something. But what we've done is we've given poets and fiction writers around the country a place to send their work where they can be confident that they will get not only a sympathetic reading, but an intelligent reading from people who know and love the game of baseball as much as they do. And we're very proud of the fact that we've published so many deserving poets and short story writers and, writers of nonfiction. We don't do a lot of nonfiction, but occasionally we do publish some sort of prose that's about baseball on an interesting topic. But that's really what we're so proud of doing, and the fact that we've done it without any government subsidies, or we don't get any money from some college. It's financed completely out of our own pockets, from subscriptions and from the minimal advertising that we are able to attract for each issue. And, of course, the other thing that we're so immensely proud of is the Casey Award. When we started the Casey Award 34 years ago, there was no award specifically for a baseball book of any kind. So the Casey was totally unique. It was the first thing of its kind, and I think over the years it's become now, as you know, Ron, there are other awards for baseball books, but they don't have the history that the Casey does. We were the first. We were the original, And we also have something else going for us. Our book, our award is not given for a specific type of baseball book. Every baseball book published during a calendar year is eligible for the award, regardless of the genre. So when you win the Casey Award, that means you've beaten out every other baseball book that's published in that calendar year, and that's quite an achievement. And I know, Ron, that you're very familiar with the past winners of the Casey Award, but anybody who's not, if they take a look, they take a second to go to our website and look at the past winners of the Casey Award, I don't see how they could not but be impressed with the names of the winners on that list.
Give us some of those names, because unfortunately I neglected to print out the list of winners. But like you say, there are some very impressive books there that have remained bestsellers for years.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like a roll call of the best baseball book authors that we have. I mean Bill James and John Hallway and Peter Golenbach and Roger Kahn and just on and on and on. And lately, Acosta Kennedy. He's by the way, he's a 2-time winner, which is extremely tough to do. But you know, guys like that have really made their mark in baseball literature, and what we felt when we started the Casey Award was that these are great books, period. They're not just great sports books. These are books that deserve recognition beyond the sports page, you know, and these are books that are so well written and important in one way or another that they could interest people who are not, you know, 24/7 crazy about baseball, eat, sleep, and drink baseball, but they have a wider and broader appeal because they're so good. There's such quality in these books, and so again, we couldn't be more proud of the Casey Award, and of course, the authors who win the award, they're thrilled to get their award, which is a Louisville Slugger baseball bat that's made especially for the Casey, and it's stamped with a special Casey Award logo, and the winner's name is engraved on the barrel of the bat, and it's just a beautiful award. And by the way, we couldn't be more proud than to be associated, you know, in this partnership with Louisville Slugger, because Louisville Slugger, well, there's nothing that's more that is automatically, you know, connected to baseball than the name Louisville Slugger.
And how are the winners selected?
Well, every year we have a 3-judge panel of 3 different judges who are independent of the magazine, and they get the list of 10 finalists, and then they vote. They rank the books from best to least best. And then, you know, we total up the scores, and whoever gets the lowest score, it's kind of like golf or cross country, whoever gets the lowest score is the winner of the Casey. And like I said, it is quite an honor, because just to make the list of the top 10 is an achievement. And we do have an award for everybody that is a finalist, but to win, to be the ultimate winner, that is really accomplishing something impressive.
Now, you're an author in your own right. You've published more than a dozen books about baseball, and among my favorites are Diamond Classics, which is a collection of essays on the 100 best baseball books ever published, Baseball Books, A Collector's Guide, and Baseball, The Writer's Game. Now, the Diamond Classics book was published in 2004, I believe. And just like to drop my own whatever, my 501 baseball book came out almost 5 years ago. That's in need of a revision, because as you obviously know, books have come down in just those 5 years that, you know, including winners of the Casey Award, that merit some more attention. So I'm hoping at some point that you'll consider revising the Diamond Classics, unless you think that there are no better books to be found than the ones that are in there already.
Well, that's a very interesting topic, and I really enjoyed your book, by the way. I thought it was a great addition to the canon of baseball literature. Very, very well done, and I was very interested in your book because you had some books on the list that you know were kind of sleepers that a lot of people don't know about, books that kind of didn't get a lot of attention but are deserving anyway. So, I thought you did a great job with that book. But getting back to Diamond Classics, which the original came out in 1988, so it's been even longer since that book came out. And to answer your question, oh my gosh, yes, I could easily do a sequel. And I thought about it, and if I live long enough and clear enough things off my plate, I would like to do another volume, not an edition, but a separate volume, which would add another, easily another 100 books to that list of Diamond Classics because, well, as you know, every year we try to limit ourselves with the Casey Award to 10 books, and even that's tough to do. So in that time, we're talking about, let's see, 12 and 16, what is that, 28 years? Oh, my gosh. Well, 28 years have passed since the original version of Diamond Classics was published. And if you just take 10 books per year, that's 280 great baseball books, great enough to be at least nominated for the Casey Award, have been published since the publication of the release of Diamond Classics. So right there, I've got a pool of 280 books to choose from, and there would be no problem at all with picking 100 great baseball books off that list to make a second volume of Diamond Classics. And so, as I wrote in the introduction to the original Diamond Classics, at the time I thought, well, is it a fair question to ask, are we in some golden age of baseball literature? Well, kind of yes and no, because that the recent decades, say the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, the baseball literature did kind of blossom, and more and more really terrific writers started turning towards baseball, and better baseball books started getting published. But it wasn't a temporary thing, and there's really been no cessation or barely a slowdown in the output in the intervening years. And so even at this point, this moved from the publication of Diamond Classics. Like I said, it's still tough for us to narrow down the list to the 10 best baseball books of a particular year. So I'm very happy to repeat what I said in the introduction to that book, which is that apparently the depth of baseball as a fit subject for inquiry and as a engine to produce great books on its subject is it's inexhaustible. Apparently, baseball is so rich, and the history of baseball is so rich that we're never gonna run out of topics. We're never gonna run out of different things to say about the game of baseball. And I think that's one of the appeals of baseball, and one of the things that makes it so great is that it's a bottomless. So it has bottomless fascination for its fans, and we're never going to run out of things to say about this great game that we love.
Now, how much of that do you attribute to the improvement and the accessibility of research material? For example, Paul Dixon has just come out with a new book about Leo Durocher. There hasn't been a book about Durocher in, off the top of my head, say 15, 20 years. So what was able to be found about Durocher that would warrant a new book like this?
That's a good question, too. And Paul Dixon would be the great guy to ask that question of. I'm not a great researcher. I think that I have I know a good story when I hear one, and I have a decent facility for turning a phrase and writing, expressing myself and all that. But I'm not a great researcher like some of these guys are, but I know what they do. And what they are able to do, you're exactly right, that, of course, we're living in the age of information, and not only does the information that's available to us keep multiplying exponentially, but the means of obtaining the information keep proliferating and keep improving, so that people can do research from their bedroom. They don't even have to get dressed. They can do this in their pajamas now. They don't have to go, you know, to some library or some facility to get documents. There's so many avenues for retrieving this stuff without even leaving home. Of course, some of that stuff is still some travel and on-site and investigation is still necessary when you really get into a subject in depth. And that's the other part of it, is that there are things that are becoming people are becoming aware of repositories of certain documents and files of information that perhaps they previous researchers either weren't aware of or didn't have the ability to travel to research. And so I think it's a combination of those two things that gives a writer today a chance to write a more in-depth and more detailed treatise on his subject, whether it's a biography or a history or whatever. And a guy like Paul Dixon, for example, a lot of footnotes in the back of one of his biographies. I mean, and this goes for anybody, any of those guys. You know, there's a lot of those guys now that are writing great biographies. And there's always a lot of footnotes in the back of the book. And what that means is that these guys are going to original documents. They aren't just making assumptions on what could have happened, and they aren't just repeating what's been printed before about the subject, but they are able to go to, more and more, they are able to go to original sources and build a picture of a person's life and career and activities from these original sources, which gives you a chance to really present a really well-rounded, as well-rounded as possible. I mean, we get to know these people as well as we could possibly know them without having been married to them, you know, and been their spouse and walked with them in person every day. But, I mean, some of these biographies are so detailed now and they're so rich that you do feel like, you know, by the time you finish reading the book, you do feel like you've known this person for many, many years, and you feel like you know this person very, very well. And Paul's a good example would be Paul's biography of I forgot his name now. Bill Veeck. I'm sorry. Yeah, Bill Veeck. Which won the Casey, by the way. And Paul was here in Cincinnati and accepted his award in person. And, you know, that was a great example of what we're talking about, because, as you know, Veeck is in Rec. That is a great baseball book. It's in Diamond Classics, and it's very entertaining. But it was basically written by the subject, and so that's the first rule of biography, is that you can't take as gospel anything that the subject himself writes down in his autobiography. you have to treat everything with a grain of salt, with a little bit of suspicion. You have to double check it, in other words. And I know that Paul, in doing that biography, he found some caches of material that other biographers had not been able to get a hold of, and it helped round out the portrait of Beck that Paul gives us in that book. So that's a great biography because it's a great subject. I mean, you don't find subject as interesting as Bill Beck every day. And then you had a great writer, a great researcher and writer like Paul Dixon, and you marry those two, you've really got a winner.
All right, so now I'm going to end things with a tough question. What's your all-time favorite baseball book?
That is an impossible question to answer. I'd probably have to say Tales from the Dugout, which is my own book, and I know that sounds self-serving, but that's the book that actually made me and my family a nice little chunk of change. So I want to thank everybody who's purchased that book. Because, you know, you made a 50-cent contribution to the Shannon Family Survival Fund, and we're very appreciative of that. I don't know. I mean, you know, people have asked me that question before, and my answer is kind of a silly answer, but there's a lot of truth in it, too. I mean, it sounds like I'm dodging the question, but I say, well, I go read Diamond Classics, and then you'll see what my favorite baseball books are. But now I'd have to say, well, read Diamond Classics and then get the list of Casey Award nominees for the last 28 years and add that to Diamond Classics, and you'll have a pretty good picture of what my favorite baseball books are. It's impossible to narrow down to one. I mean, you couldn't even make a top 10 hardly, I guess. I guess if my life depended on it, I could name 10 books, but if you asked me a week later, it might be 10 different books.
And we've been talking with Mike Shannon, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Spitball Magazines, as well as author of several books, which I'm guessing, had they been written by someone else, would have won Casey Awards.
Well, that's very kind of you to say that, and it's a joke, among my friends and family that, oh yeah, if I weren't disqualified, I would have won a couple of Casey's by now, but that probably not. Like I said, I think some of my books are very entertaining and they're fun, but I'm not sure that any of them would rise to the level of Casey Award stature, because that's the best of the best, and that's what's made it such a fun thing for us to do all these years. And I've met so many of these people in person. The winner comes to Cincinnati almost every year unless he's on his deathbed or something, which has happened, by the way, on at least one occasion, which I won't tell you who, but other than that scenario, the winner is always here, gives a great speech, and it's a big night in their life, I think, because it's such a great honor, and the crowd that we have here is so appreciative of what's been accomplished and what that Louisville Slugger represents when I hand it to the winner. So it's a great event, and we're just very, very proud that we've managed to keep Spitball going all these years, and of course the Casey Award too, and I'm making plans for both of those institutions now, which is what I think they are, for both of them to survive me, because I want Spitball to continue, and by the way, we do sell lifetime subscriptions to people, so if I keel over tomorrow, we want all our lifetime subscribers to keep getting Spitball. Just because I'm gone, it doesn't mean that Spitball has to end. So we want to see both of those things continue for as long as baseball's being played, baseball deserves a magazine like Spitball, and it deserves baseball authors and baseball books. They deserve something like the Casey Award, so we want to see them both continue.
All right, well, Mike Shannon, thank you very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it, and continued good luck.
Thank you, Ron. It's my pleasure, and you keep up all the good work that you do.
And that was the Bookshelf Conversation with Mike Shannon. Tune in again next time when we'll have another fascinating personage from the world of baseball pop culture. Could be an author, could be a musician, an actor, a filmmaker. I don't know. You don't know. We'll find out together. In the meantime, for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews, as always, visit RonKaplan'sBaseballBookshelf.com. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions, email them to me at RonKaplan'sBaseballBookshelf@gmail.com. And just in case I don't have a chance to post before the end of 2016, I'd like to wish everybody a very happy and healthy new year and holiday season, and looking forward to continuing this as the next year approaches. So long, everybody.
And boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonderful game.